Today, we've got a whole hour of new Mario facts for you. That's right, this isn't a compilation of old videos, it's actually all new trivia that's never been featured on Did You Know Gaming before, all to make sure you gently drift away into slumberland. We've gathered a selection of facts from the Mario series that we hope will sufficiently fulfill your desire for knowledge. So, without further ado, let's jump into the trivia. In 1994, Nintendo made a public event at Lelystad Airport in the Netherlands where 10,000 counterfeit Game Boy games they confiscated were run over and crushed by an antique steamroller. This was done to send a message to bootleggers, with Mario himself overseeing the entire operation. The Dutch magazine Club Nintendo Extra commented on the event, saying, "A large, heavy antique steamroller stood at the head of the pile of games, smoking and whistling. The large wheels rolled over the games without difficulty, and what was left was a mountain of unusable pulp. It was Mario in person who shook out the new boxes of games for the roller. The destroyed games had been imported from Hong Kong, then confiscated from various companies in the Netherlands with the help of customs. These bootleg titles were said to be, quote, perfect counterfeits, right down to the Nintendo seal of quality, though most were said to lack a manual, or at least one written in Dutch. And this isn't the only piece of trivia we have involving Mario-themed mascots and some unlawful circumstances. During the launch of the Nintendo Wii in Japan, one retail store welcomed a Luigi mascot, assuming they were an official representative sent by Nintendo. The costume man was naturally asked to participate in the midnight launch event at the Tokyo Game Store, a common practice during hardware launches. However, store employees later realized that the man was not an official Nintendo representative, but rather just some guy in a rather official-looking Luigi costume that crashed the party. The cosplayer was apparently arrested, and this whole incident became a bit of a meme among Japanese internet users. Some Japanese netizens even made photoshopped images that implied that the cosplayer was none other than the creator of Nintendo's biggest rival and father of the PlayStation, Ken Kutaragi. He clearly wasn't, but that would have been pretty amazing. But enough mascot tidbits for now, let's get on to some real Mario games. Super Mario 64 laid out the standards of the 3D platformer, and it continues to hold true to this day. While it's a majorly impressive game, it does have some oddities that weren't really thought through by the team during its creation. These oddities don't appear all too often, but one example is the big Goomba enemies cannot be defeated with a punch. But it gets even weirder than this. While it looks as though nothing has happened after they've taken a blow, the game actually registers and acknowledges that they have been hit, and it activates the function Mark Goomba as dead. This means that the enemies now exist in a state where the game considers them dead, but they are nevertheless still present. As a result of this, if the player moves away from the big Goombas to a spot where they aren't being rendered, and then the player returns, they simply won't load because the game considers them deceased. The Mario games, of course, grew in their scope over time, like with Super Mario Sunshine. Not just scope, but file size too, as one might expect. But not so big that there isn't a variety of storage mediums that could house it, such as a theoretical example of, say, human DNA. It's argued that it would be possible, with the development of gene editing technology, to store a copy of a game the size of Super Mario Sunshine inside the human genome. Human DNA is capable of storing roughly 1.5 billion bytes, or about 1.5 gigabytes of data. This means that Super Mario Sunshine, which comes in at 1.45 gigabytes, would fit rather snugly into the available space of the human genome, with perhaps a little extra space for a couple of NES games on top of it. So, when the time comes, I will of course be the first to inject Super Mario Sunshine into the very fibre of my being. It'd probably be impossible for a human to actually survive this if it were done, of course. And speaking of survival, here's an interesting observation about the game's Yoshis. Yoshi will disintegrate if he fails to eat fruit every 3 minutes in-game. As such, if Yoshi wanted to live as long as possible, they'd need to consume roughly 480 fruits a day just to stop their inevitable snap out of existence. That's about 175,200 fruits in a single year, and depending on what fruit Yoshi is eating to survive, it's about 167,200 calories per day, about 80 times more than the average human needs to get them through the day. Mario's next 3D outing, Super Mario Galaxy, has a huge number of secrets that are both incredibly difficult to find and even easier to miss. An example of this can be found wrapped around every black hole in the game. Obviously, nobody can make out what it is warped around this black hole, but by extracting the image, we can actually find that it is a very blurry, filtered picture of Mario in Beach Bowl Galaxy. This image is distorted beyond recognition in-game, so why it was used is unknown. Another oddity is that when characters are hit with star bits, they'll become briefly disoriented before slowly recovering and returning to normal. Bank Toad, however, has a bizarre reaction if he's hit during the purple coin mission of Dusty Dune Galaxy, where he will instead become sad when hit, indefinitely, never going back to normal. Another purple coin mission has a curious overlooked detail. Dreadnought Galaxy's purple coin mission has a special message that can only be seen if the mission is cleared with zero purple coins having been collected. This is a particularly hard feat to accomplish, as there's a purple coin in a spot that's very difficult to avoid, though there's a path that can be taken to avoid all coins. The special message reads, "Zero? Zero? Not even a single purple coin? You must have done that on purpose." That might impress some, but this old bag of bolts doesn't take kindly to that kind of stunt. See you later. After this, Mario straight up just dies on the spot. Other lesser seen secrets from Galaxy include an unused 3D model in the data, called Penguin Good's Hat. This model of a top hat isn't simply an item of clothing, but hides a very small penguin inside of it. Based on this object's name and other objects within the game, such as Penguin Good's swim cap, it's likely that this hat would have been worn by another penguin. It's penguins all the way down. Some of you may have seen a few mistakes in Galaxy, but there are plenty of mistakes you've probably not seen at all. The game's developers appeared to let several spelling mistakes slip through in the game's data, with both Galaxy 1 and 2 having many misspellings, with words such as dirt being spelled D-U-R-T, or leaf as L-E-E-F, and with huge battleship instead of battleship. Though to be fair, this seems to be a collection of badly transliterated words from Japanese, which are easy mistakes to make for a native Japanese speaker who isn't fluent in English. Galaxy 2 has its own little detail as well. The decorative butterflies, for example, can actually change colour. If Mario remains idle for long enough to enter his sleep state, a nearby butterfly will come along and land on him. When he wakes up, the butterfly will change colour to green, unless of course, it is already green. Why this happens hasn't really been explained, but it didn't happen in the first game, and it was only added to the sequel. Galaxy 2's unused data also suggests that there was once an animation that was perhaps a bit too graphic for a family-friendly title like Mario. In the final game, Mario's skeleton becomes visible if he is hit by electricity, simply stuck in the same pose as the moment he received a shock. But data shows that there was an animation for his skeleton actually falling apart and scattering across the floor, a rather grim end for the plumber, and one that might have been a little too morbid for kids. Other unseen data gives us some vital insights into the character of Lubber. Dialogue can be found which never shows up in game, and reveals that his favourite foods are beans and ham.
One part of Galaxy 2 was actually set to make a comeback in another Mario title sometime later. Documents handed out at the 2014 Nintendo Game Seminar gave details about the then-upcoming Super Mario 3D World. Illustrations from these documents seem to depict concept art showing some unused ideas, like how the Cloud Flower was once intended to make an appearance in 3D World, and that Cat Luigi was originally going to be based on the appearance of a tiger, possibly on account of his ferocious attitude. Another detail about the game was revealed in a 2013 interview with producer Yoshiaki Koizumi, who described an early prototype build of the game, in which the characters were already animated to move like cats, but their final appearances for the cat power had not yet been created, so they were simply in their usual attire. In this interview, he describes the fact that Princess Peach would be running around like a cat in her dress, and that rather than looking cute, as you might describe this animation in the final game, it actually looked more, quote, like a scene from a horror movie. Now, let's take a look at classic Mario titles, going back to some of his earliest appearances, like, say, Super Mario Bros. Regionally, there isn't a whole lot that changed between different versions of this game, but there was one difference in particular. A paratrooper's jump leaves just enough space to allow Mario to stand in a position where the enemy can land right in front of him, jump, and then land right behind him. This is easy to show in World 8 Level 2, where a paratrooper jumps onto the screen as the level starts. In the Japanese and North American versions of the game, this paratrooper happens to jump in a way that the player can simply stand still as the level begins, and the paratrooper will avoid them perfectly. In the European version of the game, however, this enemy's movement was deliberately altered to have a different initial starting point, resulting in direct contact being made if standing still, killing the player. Japan has its own specific piece of trivia which wouldn't have been witnessed elsewhere. The Satellaview was a hardware attachment for the Super Famicom that would allow players to, in simple terms, download unique titles via a satellite broadcast and play them in real time while a radio show is received by the console. In a bizarre instance, this means that an official piece of Mario Media, a broadcast of Super Mario Bros. 3, contained a fragment of Rick Astley's famous 1987 track, Never Gonna Give You Up. A snippet of the song could be heard in the background during the live broadcast behind a broadcaster's voice.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Another version of Super Mario Bros. 3, the wonderfully titled Super Mario Advance 4 Super Mario Bros. 3, contains a unique unused enemy that doesn't appear in the data of the NES or Super Mario All-Stars release. The enemy is supposed to be a bullet bill that homes in on the player, but when loaded in-game, it actually looks like a warp whistle utilizing a blue palette. This means that when the game is modified to spawn the enemy in, Mario will be haunted by a sinister blue warp whistle which will chase him down in an attempt to kill him. This enemy seems to utilize in-engine sprite rotation, which might suggest the developers wanted to create new situations exclusive to this release of Mario 3 using Game Boy Advance rendering techniques. Super Mario World also has some cut content, only found by dissecting early development files. In the final game, Yoshi is unable to enter into certain levels, such as castles or ghost houses, with Mario making him wait outside. Or if the cartoon based on the game is to be believed, because Yoshi is just too scared to enter. It appears that during development, what appears to be a cushion or resting spot would have been available for Yoshi to have a more comfortable place to sit and wait for Mario. Instead, in the final game, the poor guy is left just hopping on the spot. In Yoshi's own sequel, Yoshi's Island, official material from Nintendo of Europe actually gave each of the Yoshis in the title their own names. Yoshi, Johnny, Sunny, Claudie, Eddie, Nettie, Tommy, and Marcy. Though not in the game, the names seem to have some solid foundation as being official, considering they were included in both the game's official guide, as well as Club Nintendo comics. Mario Party has been a staple of the Mario IP for over 25 years at this point. The party time fun was enough to earn the game plenty of sequels since its debut on the N64. And of course, with plenty of sequels comes plenty of interesting trivia. In Mario Party 3, the player can actually take a small amount of control over the AI players. Computer-controlled opponents can be tricked into stealing low-value items. The AI is programmed to steal the character's favorite item. For example, Yoshi's favorite item is the warp block. As this is the case, if the player buys a warp block, a relatively cheap item, the AI will be compelled to take it anyway, thus protecting the player's true valuables. Mario Party 4 was promoted in North America with a pretty iconic commercial that had all kinds of antics, like Mario skiing off of a roof, Yoshi parasailing from a car, and the whole cast generally just beating the hell out of each other. But it wasn't all fun and games. An incident took place in which the actor playing Yoshi accidentally fell into a pool of water. As you can imagine, it had been near impossible to swim in a drenched dinosaur costume, and the actor had to be rescued. While they managed to avoid serious injury, according to the costume company, the performer nearly drowned. Blimey. But it isn't only on set that things can go wrong for the Mario Party games. In the 6th entry of the series, a game-breaking bug exists that softlocks the game and forces the player to reset. If the AI players are set to the unlockable Brutal difficulty, the computer-controlled character can become overly insistent on the decision they want to make, even if that decision isn't even possible. For example, if the AI wanted to duel another player for their stars at a time when this wasn't possible, rather than selecting another player to duel, it will simply go back to the previous menu and try again. This loop will then continue indefinitely until the game is reset. Now, just because a video is about Mario doesn't mean it has to all be about Mario games. Earthbound, released in Japan as Mother 2, has a small Easter egg exclusive to its Japanese release. In Mother 2's character name selections, selecting the option Don't Care will fill a character's name in with a default option. Selecting it multiple times will cycle through additional ideas to name a character. Selecting Don't Care 6 times will give the character a name with a Mario-themed option. With Ness becoming Mario, Paula being Peach, Jeff turning into Luigi, Pooh becoming Toad, and King being Yoshi. Speaking of RPGs, Mario's made his way into plenty of turn-based titles, and they're considered some of his best. Take Paper Mario, for example, which has a huge amount of fascinating details and behind-the-scenes secrets. YouTuber Gorialis discovered some pretty strange secrets in the Japanese release's Attract mode. As with many other games, the Attract mode of Paper Mario shows off a number of gameplay elements if the player leaves the game on its title screen for a few moments. There's 18 different clips in total that will play, including a cutscene and several battle examples, but the vast majority are just general overworld gameplay. While on the surface this all seems fairly standard, Gorialis discovered that while the battles were entirely scripted gameplay, the cutscenes and overworld gameplay are actually being played by the game, with the fadeouts being determined by either hitting a loading screen or through a simple timer. These clips are displayed by the game loading a game state and playing through predefined actions using a virtual controller. Though, bizarrely, there are still some inputs that take place without any input, such as with a partner swap. There's also a clip of Peach stepping out onto a balcony, which, while appearing to be a cutscene, is actually overworld gameplay with pre-programmed inputs.
But this is only the beginning. As the game is using a virtual controller, what would happen if someone were to hijack that controller and change the inputs? In the very first clip, the game can be reprogrammed to turn around and immediately enter a battle. Gumbario will then proceed to explain the battle order, which tells us that in this game's state, this is the first battle entered with Gumbario. In the first fight, Mario also doesn't have his hammer and can't even perform the action command, making the battle impossible to win. We've previously mentioned that the partner swap in one clip takes place without the input from the virtual controller. As it turns out, this is because the swap is on a fixed timer and will take place no matter what position Mario and his partner are in. Hijacking the next clip allows Mario to collect items from the blocks in the scene, leaving the text box for the item on screen for the remaining overworld clips. But perhaps more interestingly, if Mario then enters battle in the following clip, the items have followed Mario between scenes and are still in his inventory. In this battle, we can see that the partners are Ultra Rank, despite the fact that they are not even supposed to appear in this chapter. Opening the partner change menu shows us that not only does Mario have every companion available, but that they're all Ultra Rank as well. This newfound control also means that Mario can be forced to take different routes in the overworld segments, talking to NPCs and taking damage, including the aforementioned Princess Peach cutscene, where the character can be made to run around freely. But there's more. In the Koopa Brothers Fortress clip, Mario can be made to save the game. However, all this seems to achieve is setting every file slot with the title Error and the same amount of completion. Upon loading the file, the player is loaded in exactly where the save took place, but not only are all the enemies missing, there is also an invisible wall preventing the player from progressing. As before, the player has every partner at Ultra rank, but continuing to open the menu will cause the game to crash completely. Perhaps the most fascinating part of all of this is that because it's possible to enter battles in this way, it's also possible to get a game over. When this happens, the game appears to return to the title screen as it should, but it can now only be controlled with the virtual controller, and the physical controller doesn't function at all. A new game can be started, but the demo music never stops playing. While it appears as though the game is going to continue as normal, the demo's screen transition parameters still apply, so as soon as Peach's letter is opened, the game automatically transitions to the next clip from the demo as usual, returning the border and giving the physical controller functionality. Be sure to watch Gorialis' video for a more in-depth look at each scene and how they function. But this isn't all the trivia Paper Mario has to offer. There's a letter that Paracarry has that can be delivered to Colorado. While this delivery is par for the course for the partner, there's an interesting and unique interaction if the player waits for a specific moment. If the letter is delivered at the moment Colorado is run over by a spiny tromp, the player is rewarded with an entirely different set of dialogue. Paracarry states, "The name's Paracarry, I deliver letters, I believe I have one for you, hang on a moment." Another letter duly delivered. Postman's job is never done. Are you alright? With Colorado responding, "Yow! Ow ow! The treasures are waiting for me over there, I know it! Oh, a letter! Oh, good show! It's a letter from my wife, thank you ever so, old chap. This is just what I needed to give me the strength to go on. I know, I'll pass this along as a spot of thanks. I came across it while I was wandering about the jungle researching things." He then gives him an item, though I can't remember what it is. Of course, Paper Mario features its fair share of cut content too. In the foyer of Peach's castle, to the left of the staircase, there is an area where a door should almost definitely be present, with the room essentially being mirrored except for this missing feature. As it happens, the door is actually there, just behind the texture of the wall, with its loading zone made inactive. Where this mysterious door was meant to have led, however, if anywhere, is unknown. Another piece of cut content still in the data is unused text that refers to a partner that could have been a Ninji Boy. The text simply reads, "Ninji Boy, he can lower the block." The game's follow-up, Paper Mario: The Thousand Year Door, is often touted as the pinnacle of Mario's RPG outings. The game has several Easter eggs and references that unfortunately got lost in translation. In the Japanese version of the game, the heart symbol is not coded as a special character, but rather a representation of the kanji symbol meaning pigeon. So, whenever a character uses a heart symbol in their text, they are actually saying pigeon. This is likely a pun based on the fact that the kanji is pronounced hato, a similar sounding word to heart. Another detail lost in translation is that the dragons featured in both Thousand Year Door and Super Paper Mario are actually related to the Blargs from Super Mario World. This is evident from their names in the Japanese versions of the game. In Japan, Blargs are referred to as Unbaba, and Hooktail and Fracktail are called Gonbaba and Zunbaba respectively. The other dragons also follow this naming scheme, with Gloomtail being called Bunbaba and Bonetail being Zonbaba. Similarly, the Fracktail recolor, Racktail, is named Zanbaba. This reference only exists in the Japanese versions of the titles, with the names being changed in every other region. Lastly, in the English version of Thousand Year Door, Goombella attends a university called U-Goom. But many other language versions of the game make puns based on real universities from around the globe. In Japan, she attends California University, a combination of Kuribo, the Japanese name for a Goomba, and the University of California. In German, she goes to Gumboldt Universität, a play on Humboldt University in Berlin. In France, it's Université de la Gaumont, a pun on Sorbonne University in Paris. Spain features Universidad Complutense, based on Complutense University of Madrid. In Italian, it's Università Cogumia, a pun on Columbia University in New York. But it's not just Easter eggs that are interesting from the Thousand Year Door. Throughout the game, some bosses are capable of attacking the audience, and Cortez, the boss of Chapter 5, is one of them. If his health is reduced below 10 during the third phase of the fight, he'll attack the entire right side of the audience. This will cause them to fall over and disappear. It just so happens that there's a 1 in 20 chance of Luigi appearing in any battle, and he is randomly placed in seats, meaning that there is a 1 in 40 chance that Luigi will be seated on the right side of the audience and Mario's brother will have his soul absorbed by Cortez. Rather than disappearing like the other audience members, Luigi will appear to simply die and remain there. This isn't the only interaction in battles. Audience members can sometimes throw objects at Mario during a fight. While normally these are totally random, if Mario fails a hammer attack, any hammer brothers in the audience will start throwing their hammers at him in disgust. Another interesting interaction can be seen if the player uses cheats to enter a cutscene without a partner. Whenever it gets to the point where the partner was supposed to have dialogue, Mario will speak instead. Because there's no text programmed into the game for Mario in these conversations, the text bubbles will simply read, "No messages," English, in most cases. However, in at least one case found so far, Mario does in fact have something to say. When entering a particular scene without Koops, Mario will look at the skeleton in front of him and say, "These bones, they remind me of my father."
Yet another tidbit is that Jade Aster 64 of the Super Mario Files WordPress has found a way to make Mario almost completely immortal by raising his evasion rate, though it is no mean feat. While simple, the method requires an unbelievable amount of grinding. Spinier, Spannier, Spunnier, Bandits, and Badge Bandit enemies all have a 1 in 100 chance of carrying a pretty lucky badge. These can be obtained by using the partner Miss Mouse to steal them, or by defeating the enemies and collecting them post-combat. If the player grinds enough and uses all 99 of Mario's badge points to equip a total of 49 pretty lucky badges, his evasion rating becomes 99.427%, giving enemies just a 1 in 176 chance of actually hitting Mario with any attack. So much for lucky. More unused assets can be found in Super Paper Mario. Present in the game's data is an unused Evil Mario enemy. While our old pal Mario is always facing towards the screen, this Nega Mario is always showing his back to the camera. Though not present in the actual game, Evil Mario's stats and AI are instead used for Shadow, the secret boss in the Flopside Pit of 100 Trials. Another interesting aspect of Super Paper Mario comes from the boss O'Chunks. During the fight, the boss will treat the male characters much more harshly, throwing them against walls and taunting the character. Not only will he throw Peach much less aggressively, simply tossing her rather than hurling her into walls, dealing less damage overall, he will then wait patiently for Peach to stand back up after being knocked to the ground. The next game in the series is Paper Mario Sticker Star. Despite never appearing in the actual story of the game, Luigi does appear in the background numerous times. In five different stages, Luigi can be spotted in the background seemingly staring longingly at something. Using the Paper Eyes ability, the player can actually grab Luigi and remove him from the page. He will then proceed to run off screen. Each time this happens, if the player visits the leftmost house in the DeKalbberg suburbs, there'll be a newspaper article about each Luigi sighting. If the player finds Luigi every time he appears throughout the game, he'll be the one leading the parade during the end credits. There's also a few subtle references to past Paper Mario titles. In the Shy Guy jungle, there's a small area completely filled with scrap. Hidden amongst this pile of rubbish are two messages reading, "Thank you for your letter. Sorry I'm not here to receive it, but I will get back to you shortly. Thanks, Paracarry." And observations on the ancient civilization of the Chomp Ruins University of Goomgoombella. There's also a few unused stickers included in the game's files, such as a bigger version of the Leaf sticker, a Super Leaf sticker, a Rock sticker, a Spiny Egg sticker, but perhaps most interesting of all is the Piranha Hat sticker. This, theoretically, would have been used to protect Mario from aerial attacks. For Paper Mario Color Splash, Huey's model was made to be immensely smooth, featuring an unusually high number of polygons for a Mario game. The model features so many polygons, in fact, that it would take more processing power to display Huey than it would to render every environment from Super Mario 64 all at once. Paper Mario The Origami King was also a pretty impressive looking game, but interestingly, there's a ton of graphics the player never even gets to see. The game's characters have back sprites for all animations, including ones that would never be seen from the back during regular gameplay. And weirdly, one of Bowser Jr.'s unseen back sprites has one of his legs detached from his body, floating in midair high above him. A different kind of Mario RPG is Mario & Luigi Dream Team. At least, that's its name in most locations. Over in Europe, we actually had a game with a slightly different title, and it certainly isn't as catchy. Mario & Luigi Dream Team Bros. The bizarre choice to place Bros at the end of the game's title has never actually been justified officially, but one of the most plausible suggestions as to why the company slapped an extra word on there is because there was a trademark given out for the name Dream Team in the UK in 2010, which was still valid at the time the game was released. In order to avoid any possible legal implications within Europe, Nintendo may have opted to just add the word Bros to distance itself from the trademark. The name wasn't the only marginally janky aspect of Dream Team. There's even an error in its graphics. For a single frame of animation, created for one of Bowser Jr.'s attacks. Not exactly a massive error, but the frame renders two blue squares, often used during sprite creation as a method of tiling a character's graphics. Bowser himself was actually considered as a playable character at one stage of development, but the idea was dropped so the team could focus the game more on the brothers themselves. There's clearly other ideas that were cut in production, as present in the game's files are a few unused moves for Mario and Luigi, an ice flower, the Yoo-Hoo cannon, and the jump helmet. The cut content continues with Paper Jam, the last all-new title in the series. And this might be for good, as series developer Alpha Dream closed its doors in 2020. Paper Jam's crossover with Paper Mario was initially going to include another character that was removed from its plans as development went on, Paper Luigi. Though absent in the final version of Paper Jam, it was initially intended for Luigi to be another playable character, but he was removed as a result of the game becoming too complicated. If there's one sport that comes to mind when it's time to settle down and get to sleep, it has to be the long, slow pace of golf. Lucky for us, Mario has starred in a fair few golf titles, though the experience seems to have differed between regions. The European release of the original Mario Golf on Nintendo 64 varied from elsewhere, having featured an entirely different musical track for the game's introduction, though for why, we aren't sure, as the track featured in the other regional releases of the game still appears on the game's cartridge, taking up that same data capacity, just going unused. Another difference from the game's Japanese release that occurs in all other regions is the inclusion of a whole character, Metal Mario, who doesn't appear at all in the original version released in Japan. There's also some oddities with the game that have flown under many people's radars, which can be seen when all players decide to play as either Yoshi or Donkey Kong. Doing this will change the music that normally plays during a match into a hidden track based on the Palm Club found in Mario Golf for the Game Boy Color. And while the game has some fun secrets, it also has some bizarre errors, like with the game's tournament mode selection screen, where the Boo Classic Tournament is misspelled, instead being the Boo Classique Tournament, with just one S. Of course, this wasn't Mario's only adventure on the green, returning again with Mario Golf Advance Tour. Another mistake can be found within this title, revolving around Wario and Waluigi, two characters who have fairly distinct voices from one another, though it seems not too distinct, as a programming error slipped through the net before its release, in which selecting either character will play the voice of the other. Wario sounds like Waluigi, and Waluigi sounds like Wario. The game also features its own quirky, unused data revolving around its maps. Within the game's data are a selection of 8 unused rooms, referred to as the Chicken Rooms. Why? Well, each of these rooms looks exactly the same, an entirely empty void of space, save for the single chicken located within them. And why a chicken? Well, why not?
Mario Golf Toadstool Tour has its fair share of Easter eggs and secrets. Normally, for a family-friendly title, developers steer away from shaming a player for taking too long to make a move, but Toadstool Tour decides to take a different direction. If the player refrains from hitting the ball, Boo will appear to provide them with tips that will help the players better their shot. That is, unless the player takes far too long. Waiting for a long enough time will cause the Boo to lose his patience and begin chastising the player instead, taunting them with messages such as, "Why haven't you hit the ball yet? Do you plan on hitting the ball today? You're a slow player. Hey, are you even there anymore? Hey, you've got to hit the ball to play. What? You want to go to the clubhouse? I don't want to wait forever, and hit it already." The game also has a fairly strange crossover appearance with another Nintendo franchise. If the player chooses to play at Peach's Castle Course, and their golf ball lands in a yellow flower bed, the 3 original types of Pikmin will fly out. Another tidbit about the game actually relates to a mistake that many people believe to be true after it circulated online, partly because of us, to be fair. But here's a correction for you. Luigi signs an L shape multiple times throughout Toadstool Tour because, you know, L for Luigi. But this also, coincidentally, looks a lot like the American Sign Language sign for the word lesbian. However, this is not actually correct, as Luigi uses the wrong hand for this sign and is pointing in the wrong direction. Sorry about that, that's our bad. Moving on to a different Mario Sports title, Mario Power Tennis has a few points of interest, including some details that indicate what could have been. In the cinematic introduction for the game, we see a variety of characters entering the stadium for the big upcoming tournament. Some eagle-eyed viewers may have noticed that on the tournament table in the background, a team pairing can be seen that do not actually appear in the final game. Toad and Toadette. It's unknown whether this was included for flavour or whether the characters were originally planned to be included in the title. Why not let us know what you guys think? Something that we definitely do know was planned to be used at one point but was cut is this image of a Hammer Brother. The file's name is XCMDL Linesman H Bros Line SBN. It goes without saying that it seems as though the Hammer Brothers were planned to be linesmen at some point in development. A not-so-subtle reference was made to Nintendo's toy-based origins in the game as well. Wario's power shot is called the Ultra Hand Return, and, true to its name, the shot has Wario summon the 1966 Nintendo toy, invented by Gunpei Yokoi, the Ultra Hand. The toy is essentially an extending grabber, but Wario will of course use it to smash a ball that's out of reach. Another sport that Mario and his pals play is one of the all-time classic American pastimes. Mario's Superstar Baseball went through many iterations, as can be seen in earlier promotional material from E3 2005. This build of the game was just called Mario Baseball. The field, Mario Stadium, lacks environmental details like palm trees, and the game's star chance meter and other graphics are different. But the most interesting bit of development trivia comes from an unused graphic in the final game's data. This strange image is speculated to have been a placeholder for the title screen during development. The creepy black and white image appears to be of Mario and Luigi and features Japanese text which translates as Luigi's brother's baseball. The devs clearly hold Luigi in high regard, don't we all? Dr. Mario saw Mario in a rather different profession to his usual trade, now tasked with busting down viruses with the power of pills. A 1989 prototype of Dr. Mario is perhaps one of the earliest known builds of the game to have been created, and as such, during this early stage, the game didn't even have an official name yet, with the title simply being Virus at the time. It seems the game was mostly running off of code used for the NES version of Tetris. In fact, this prototype mostly utilizes the same sound effects as Tetris, simply sped up to double speed, and much of the game's music is in the data, though never called into play. Side-by-side comparison of the game's main gameplay screen shows that this early version was of course far less refined than the end release, with some major differences between the two. Dr. Mario himself uses entirely different sprites for a start, as do the differing viruses, and much of the game's text is disgustingly difficult to read. Likely the biggest change, however, is the left side of the screen. In the final game, we see the viruses dancing away in a magnifying glass to represent what the player is fighting against, while in the early virus prototype, we see what appears to be Nurse Peach treating some sort of dog character. It may be that Nintendo opted to remove the view of a medical procedure taking place, as children may feel a bit guilty failing a level if they knew the implications, a dog succumbing to a virus and them having failed to treat it. When the game was published alongside Tetris in a double pack for the SNES, the game's instruction manual gives us an insight into one detail we could have never known, having never been mentioned in the original release's manual. The red virus is in fact female. The Game Boy version of the game also has a unique feature that doesn't appear in the NES release. If the player somehow manages to destroy four or more viruses in a single move, a secret track from Super Mario Bros. Will play. Now, some people really love Dr. Mario, but when Mario traded in his doctorate for the much more desirable role of hotel worker, well, people weren't all too fond of that. That doesn't stop Hotel Mario from having its own interesting information, however. One detail that might not be noticed, because nobody actually played the game seriously, is that the various hotels in the game are all based on real life and fictional hotels. Morton's Wood Door Hysteria is named after the Waldorf Astoria. Roy's Hard Brick Hotel is a parody of the Elvis song Heartbreak Hotel. Larry's Chilton Hotel is a seriously laid-back take on the Hilton. Lemmy's High Eight Regency Hotel is the Hyatt Regency, similar to Wendy's Blitz-Snarlton Hotel being the Ritz-Carlton. Ludwig's Hotel, Thump Castle, is of course a play on Trump's Castle, while a rather distasteful name of Bowser's Caesar's Palace Hotel is of course based on Caesar's Palace. Iggy Cooper, however, is the only member of the Cooper family without a hotel in the final release, with it only having 7 hotels in total. By taking a look under the hood and rooting through the game's data, we can see that each hotel has its own music, graphics, and enemy data file labeled by level, from L1 to L8. L6, however, is completely absent, and the game jumps from Wendy's Hotel, L5, straight to Ludwig's Hotel, L7. While the sound effects and cutscene data can be extracted relating to an L7, the hotel itself is entirely blank, suggesting that at some stage, Iggy was intended to have a hotel of his own for the player to conquer, instead of merely appearing in Bowser's hotel at the end of the game. An early version of the scene that plays after the player defeats Roy doesn't use the voice actors heard in the final release. The voices of the Mario Brothers seem to align more with the personalities given to them by Walker Boone and Tony Rosato in the Mario cartoon series, which was airing around the same time.
You know, I think maybe that Roy is a pretty good sport after all.
What do you mean?
See? He's waving goodbye.
All right!
This early cutscene data is also curious in itself, as it isn't stored where one might expect. Rather than being in the data for Roy's level, it's actually found in the game's final level. More unused data is also very strange. An audio recording of somebody, who is clearly supposed to be the voice of Mario, though sounding absolutely nothing like any depiction of the character, giving a long speech about the game's help dialogue. This was likely recorded as a placeholder before a final voice actor was decided on.
The object of the game is to close all the doors. You have to help me explore each hotel stage by opening and closing doors, looking for hidden treasures and clues to solve the puzzles.
Plans will often change course during development, and Mario vs. Donkey Kong is a great example of this. The game was originally revealed at E3 in 2002, but with a different initial concept, called Donkey Kong Plus, a sequel to the Game Boy version of the original Donkey Kong, featuring updated graphics and with the inclusion of a level editor. When this concept wound up being dropped, really, it was just recycled. Mini Marios were introduced to the gameplay, and the name was changed to Mario vs. Donkey Kong. While the level editor was taken out of the final release of the game, it wasn't taken out of the game's data, and by editing the game's memory, it's actually still possible to gain access to the level editor feature. Why it was taken out is unknown. The US version of the game also had a feature unique to the region, e-reader support, a device that would have allowed players to scan cards into the game in order to unlock additional levels. This isn't widely known, however. The five different cards that allowed for additional levels to be unlocked were only given away as part of a special promotion for the game, and even with that in mind, there were only 1,000 card packs produced in all. Donkey Kong might not necessarily be a Mario character exclusively, but one character who is would be Captain Toad. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker slowed the usual pace of the Mario series platforming into more of a puzzler. This slowed down nature is also at the heart of a spooky little secret that can be revealed in the Bizarre Doors of Moo Mansion level. If the player simply waits around on this stage for 300 seconds, or 5 minutes exactly, a creepy set of horror movie-esque handprints will suddenly appear on one of the walls. On the topic of the spooky, Luigi's Mansion is a great series, which also hands the reins over to somebody other than Mario. Hiding scary details is a key part of what makes Nintendo's attempts at subtle horror so strong, but some of them might have been hidden a bit too well. Floating out of bounds to the far left of the storage room is an extremely faint object, only just visible to the naked eye. By increasing the brightness and contrast of the image, it will reveal that this is in fact actually a poster of a ghost holding a trumpet. There's another subtle detail in this Luigi's Mansion game that many players probably haven't noticed, even though it's right in front of them. The Poltergust 3000, Luigi's vacuum device, counts the exact number of dust particles that the player sucks up. This isn't to check it against a maximum capacity or any actual purpose in gameplay, but purely for the sake of maximizing the device's realism, making sure that when the Poltergust expels air, it blows out the exact same amount of particles that just got sucked up. Now that is detail. Now, we've heard of the phrase eyes on the back of your head, but we've never heard of anyone having eyes on the back of their eyes. Usually, Mario characters have the 3D part of their eyeballs rendered without any details on their backs, simply the pure white of the eye. In Luigi's Mansion 3, however, Peach's eyes include the addition of a pair of irises on the backside of her eyeballs, allowing the princess to look towards the inside of her own skull. Bizarre. For Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, it seems the developers weren't afraid to reference Nintendo's past fumbles. When the player gets a video call off of EGAD during the first mission, he makes mention that he's worried about the battery life on the player's dual screen, the device given to Luigi by GAD. Because of his worries, he turned down the brightness, so that it should last for a good while yet. This interaction is actually a joke at the expense of Nintendo, acknowledging the original DS's short battery life, a common complaint from players, with the dual screen, of course, simply being a modified DS system. Inspiration from Nintendo's past doesn't stop there. During an interview with gameplay engineer Brian Davis, he mentioned he was inspired by an early Nintendo title while working on the player's relationship with Toad during escort missions in which they have to help him escape the castle. Davis said, there are missions where you have to find Toad, free him, and escort him out of the mansion. There's a connection between you and Toad. For me, when I was developing that, it reminded me of The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. In the very first mission, you go and find the princess and try to lead her out of the castle. I tried to keep that in mind, to kind of honor the original designers of that game and have a little anecdote in there. Mario's bitter rival has his own sub-series too, Wario. Wario Land 4 for the Game Boy Advance really started to set the tone for Wario's more modern appearances, with parody and comedy being at the heart of what makes his game stand out. An example of this can be seen with the game's item shop, where the owner of the store will offer Wario a smile for free. While we in the West may not get this, it's actually a reference to McDonald's in Japan, where a smile is actually something that can be ordered at the cost of 0 yen. Wario Land Shake It was another entry into the Wario series that changed up what one might have expected to see. With a unique visual style, getting a new composer in seemed like a great idea. Enter Tomoya Tomita, who stated that, as a first project for him working with Nintendo, he felt immense pressure. At the time, he hadn't done any sound work for a while, nor actually composed any music for almost a decade, leading to severe doubts about his capability. He felt inspired by the game's hand-drawn art style, which hadn't been seen too often at this point, leading to him wanting to come up with a way to convey the cool side of Wario. This led to funk being the main style he had in mind. Creating music for the title was difficult too, because each stage had to have two different versions of each song created, the main theme of a stage and the escape theme. When Tomita found out about this, it made him begin to lose hope. Having not created music in some time, learning that he had to essentially write twice as many compositions was a lot. Not only that, but he also had to design all of the game's sound effects. In the end, his burden eased as time went on, and the process became more enjoyable rather than daunting. He believes that his best work on the game was in the theme of Mount Lava Lava, capturing both the cool and funky sides of Wario well. But Wario is, of course, more than just cool. He has a selection of other skills, like being the Master of Disguise. Wario Master of Disguise may have flown under many people's radars, but the game includes a number of interesting references to Nintendo's history. A simple example is Genius Wario's extendable arm with a boxing glove on the end. This attack is no doubt based on Nintendo's classic toy, the Ultra Hand, made by the Big N in the late 60s before their entry into the video game market. One treasure Wario can obtain is the Game & Watch 9000, a clear nod to the Game & Watch series of handhelds. Though its versatility is perhaps ramped up, with the description reading, an amazing handheld game unit with 50 screens, when unfolded, takes up as much space as a timeshare condo. We can also examine the screen of this device, and just about make out that the game on it is 1981's Octopus. Stuffy the Dolphin, the boss of Episode 8, is also referred to as the 64th ruler of the Dolphinian Empire, which references two consoles in one, both the Nintendo 64 as the 64th ruler, and the original working title of the GameCube, the Dolphin.
But it isn't always about the old, sometimes we gotta talk about the new, like New Super Mario Bros., a series that started in 2006, very modern. New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, a re-release of the Wii U edition, arrived on the Switch in 2019. Unlike the original release, the spin jump can be activated by simply pressing the jump button again whilst in mid-air, along with any other actions that would be triggered by the same original input. While this might seem like a quality of life upgrade, it's been noted by some as a hindrance when it comes to making precise jumps, triggering by mistake. It seems like the game's developers recognized that some players may wish to disable this, but they decided upon an exceptionally bizarre means of being able to do so. While most people would assume modifying the game's input would be managed via an options menu, instead, the player must enter an undocumented button combination on the game's title screen. Pressing the left stick down for about 3 seconds, and then pressing L and R, the player will then hear Nabbit make a noise. and the player can then start a new file with the spin jump button disabled. Nintendo is notorious for its lack of customizable controls, but the idea of having to input a cheat to disable a button input that isn't even needed is beyond comprehension. Beyond comprehension. I guess that works as a way of starting to talk about a Mario game that was beyond all comprehension before its release, and that's Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. The original internal working name at Ubisoft for the Mario and Rabbids crossover was Moria, which some of you may immediately recognise as being an anagram of Mario. But the meaning is actually a bit deeper than that. The word Moria is also defined as something being excessively frivolous or a lack of seriousness. When it comes to the Rabbids, it seems that this description works quite well. So, in reality, the working title fits both halves of the casting. There's even a Moria logo that can be found in the game's files, which is almost identical to the door of the Mines of Moria from The Lord of the Rings. It seems like this would have appeared during the splash screen for logos such as Nintendo or Ubisoft. Inspiration came from all sorts of places when it came to content for this title, with creative director Davide Soliani stating that one of his major influences came from the Mario Kart series. So, we started with the intention of saying that we wanted to renew the genre a little bit. We thought that tactical games are known to be slow-paced and they tend to be a little niche, so why not try and have something very dynamic and colourful and fast-paced? That's why our first reference was Mario Kart. How cool would it be to translate that kind of action into the combat of our game? Soliani also went on to talk about one major part of confusion for fans: where is Rayman? He explained that the team had talked about adding Rayman to the title, but it was decided that it would be best to leave him out. Since they are now both separate series, it might make people assume that they were one and the same. We discussed it, but honestly, we thought that the strength of the Rabbids is that they are a white canvas, so you can do pretty much whatever you want. You can come up with crazy ideas, and they work. We tried to bring the same spirit into this game. Mr. Miyamoto kept saying, "Show me your colours, show me your Rabbids humour even more, show me how crazy you can be." Of course, Rayman was part of the Rabbids games in the past, but now they are two separate universes. Another behind the scenes secret was shown off by Soliani on Twitter. During development, the game's animators gave Rabbid Princess Peach a transformation sequence inspired by Sailor Moon. Unfortunately, it seems the animation was never intended to be used in the game, and was just the result of animators going a bit bonkers from making hundreds and hundreds of animations. Soliani stated, "When you have to create 1,000 animations per character just for the combat phase, animators started to go crazy." Another major blow to retro fans was hearing that, according to Grant Kirkhope himself, the Phantom Rabbids theme was originally conceived to have had rap and heavy metal variants, rather than just the single operatic track heard in the final release. The team wasn't satisfied with how the other versions of the track were coming out, so focus was shifted. If the DK rap is any indication, this is of course one of the greatest losses to the art of video game music we will ever endure.